You're listening to Cairo News Radio Middays.
Welcome back to Cairo News Radio Middays. Jack Stein, Spike O'Neill, Mr. Safe Parking Space himself. It's a weird nickname we got there.
It doesn't look great on a name tag either.
It looks pretty bizarre. Awkward. Before we get into this shelter in Tacoma and my various and sundry thoughts on it, I can't shake that CBS report about the kids who are complaining about TikTok being under congressional investigation.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
Those teenage girls, that girl, and she's like, I love TikTok. The Chinese aren't spying on us. That's not what she sounds like, but I'm close enough. She does not know what she's talking about. Why are they playing? And I have all due respect to CBS News, but if you want to play somebody, a clip of somebody talking about TikTok, you would imagine that you would play somebody who actually knows about TikTok, not a user who has limited information on TikTok other than they love it. Because if you actually look into TikTok, which I'm sure that you and Chris and Andrew are all tired of me talking about this, but I'll say it again. It is the worst app that you can have on your phone. In terms of data that it takes, it is astounding the amount of information that it takes off of your phone. It is not a safe app to have. It is poorly rated. If you look at the kind of so there are rating systems for apps and how quote-unquote safe they are, meaning how much they protect your data. TikTok is often the worst on the list, and yet there are millions, if not tens of millions, of adolescents out there who are running around saying, I love TikTok, when in actuality, their data is just taken directly from them, put onto servers in China for them to access that information. Well, and this isn't me being all, Alex Jonesy about it. This is literally what the app does, and people, you have got a bunch of 16-year-old kids going, I love it, when they don't know what they're talking about.
Well, she doesn't have to worry about a thing.
That's true.
I'll tell you why. Because the congressional hearings on TikTok are being run by the most technically illiterate elected officials I've ever seen in my life.
This is true. I mean, yes.
There's one instance where this representative, I don't want to point any fingers. I don't care what party he's from. He says he's asking the CEO of TikTok, who's testifying for Congress, when I use TikTok in my home, does it connect to my home Wi-Fi? And the guy says, well, if you enable your Wi-Fi, I don't understand the question. Well, if it connects to my home Wi-Fi, I can then connect to every other device in my home and get the information from my home. The guy doesn't understand how Wi-Fi works. He has no clue. And this is the person trying to keep us safe from foreign surveillance through our phone apps. I mean, TikTok is a dangerous thing. You pointed out that in China, TikTok teaches kids math. In America, TikTok teaches kids how to run through people's fences in Kool-Aid costumes. If you don't think that is a threat to this nation, you ain't paying attention.
Yeah, and I often, a lot of people accuse me of being paranoid and Alex Jonesy and all that other stuff. But the second that TikTok came out, I said, this is an op. This doesn't make any sense. This is a app that comes from a Chinese company, which is funded by the CCP, right? So what you're telling me is that they're just going to have access to literally tens of millions of people, if not hundreds of millions of people across the globe, and they're just going to say, let's just delete that data. Let's just delete it. Why would we want to save all that data? Let's just delete it.
We're never going to look at that. Never looking at that.
Right.
I mean, if it's in your phone, it's got everything your phone is into. That's the way to technologically look at it. I mean, and you're right. If it's in your phone, everything that gets your phone and your phone gets you into, which is every aspect of our life. We pay our mortgage on our phone. We do our banking on our phone. We have everything. Yeah. We shop and commerce on our phone. Everything, every detail is now their possession. And the CEO of TikTok is in Capitol Hill trying to, with a straight face, say, this is not owned by the Chinese government or involved or controlled by the Chinese government in any way, shape, or form. There is no such thing as a business in China that is not intertwined with the Chinese government.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that he would kind of bend the truth like that. I'm not going to go out and say that the man is lying, but if the government is funding or are offering subsidies to your company, and we know what the CCP does with the companies that they subsidize historically, I'm just putting two and two together, getting four.
And in China, you can do that because TikTok teaches you math. But in America,
I love like TikTok. It's fun. So, I learned how to dance.
Says in a statement after the hearing, because the hearing's just wrapped up, the CEO, quote, came prepared to answer questions from Congress, but unfortunately the day was dominated by political grandstanding that failed to acknowledge real solutions already underway, which is fair, but at the same time, it's a spy app and nobody should have it on their phone. That's my humble opinion. I am sticking to it, and I feel bad for those kids who have basically been lulled into this idea that this app is harmless or that it's good for them. You know, it's like, I don't take a lot of cues from 16-year-olds. You know what I mean? Nope. So like, I'm 35 years old. I don't necessarily take a lot of my life cues from 16-year-olds. Maybe the way that I talk, the slang that I use on the internet when I'm playing Overwatch and I'm owning a bunch of 12-year-old kids playing Overwatch too. But
that's a good move, Tim. I'm stealing that. I hear you. No, and again, this all started by having CBS feature that as an actuality from a user of TikTok that had merit in a story about international espionage.
And I like CBS. Don't get me wrong.
Me too. They know more than I do.
If I was, it is a great news organization, but I'm just saying that if I was producing that segment, I would not have used that audio. I would have gotten somebody who actually understands what the app does rather than glowing reviews from a 16-year-old. So speaking of, by the way, glowing reviews, I have positive feelings towards this safe parking space shelter opening for homeless people in Tacoma, because this is one of the solutions that I think works for people who are vehicularly homeless. We have some sound on that, correct? I think, so Q13 actually did this report on a new safe parking, I can't even talk anymore, safe parking space shelter opening for the homeless in Tacoma, and here's what that sounded like.
I think it's a good idea.
Justin Hobson recently moved to Tacoma, just down the street from the future site of the new safe parking shelter space.
Obviously, moving across country, it's a big, big jolt seeing the populations that have been displaced here. So I think any small steps that are able to be taken to make sure that they can start to get back on their feet, I think it's really important.
The shelter will offer spots in the slot for 20 vehicles with hygiene services available in one of the campus buildings.
I don't know if this is the most popular opinion with a lot of people in the area, but my family, we support it. Where I feel somewhat frustrated with the city has been around the fact that they have taken this long to get around to this.
While many support the space, opinions are mixed. We talked to folks off camera who were worried about increases in trash or crime in the neighborhood.
So the reason that I think that this is a good idea is that we complain and complain and complain about homeless people. And then you have a church that says, we will offer spots in the parking lot for about 20 cars. We're going to have bathrooms on site. This is the step in the right direction. I think if a Walmart wants to do this, if a church wants to do this, I'm all for it. Helping people who are vehicularly homeless so that they have a safe place to park their cars is good for everybody. I don't care who it is. Getting them off of residential streets into places with a fence or in a nice lit parking lot, this is all good news. Cuts down on crime. I'm all for it. I will change my opinion, however, Spike, if something does go awry, like if things start going bad.
Well, you couldn't be more correct on this story. It's the typical complaints we would have liked to have the community neighbors were saying. I read in the story from Q13. We would like to have been included in the process sooner. They had a public meeting where we could address our concerns and speak our concerns. They could address and assuage those, but they would have liked to have known sooner instead of saying, hey, we're going to put this here. This is, what are your concerns? We would like to know sooner that you're thinking of putting this. That's the typical complaint. Just keep us involved as a community. There's 20 spaces. There's security. There's hygiene services. And if there's an issue, those people lose their space. I'm sure there are much more than 20 cars who would like to have a safe place until we find a more permanent solution to get these folks back into full-time housing.
Drugs are prohibited, which I like.
Absolutely.
There is a behavioral assessment, which I like. This is checking all the boxes on things that I want to know about. The demographics, this is according to one of the individuals involved, says the demographics are mostly going to be families and single individuals. There will be background checks. There will not be sexual offenders and violent crimes that will be allowed through that background check. So I think that this is good news. This is great news. I understand, though, people's trepidation around this kind of thing.
Yeah, it's justified.
But I think that one of the things that's happened with homelessness is that now, because people want solutions, but when you start throwing out solutions, people are very hesitant, and I think rightfully so, because they've had 10 some odd years of failure. And so now even something that has kind of a spark of a step in the right direction, I think people have this kind of natural hesitation around it and aversion to it because they think, well, I don't want a repeat of the things that I have seen over the last 5 years. So who's to say somebody doesn't slip through the background check and they open a meth lab and burn the church down? I understand all these concerns, but I think these are the concessions that you have to make when trying to fix a problem rather than the talking points that I think people are like normally used to. Like, I think I think most people want there to be like a giant not welcome mat put right outside of King County. And if you're, you know what I mean?
I think it's nimcable, not in my church parking lot.
Right, exactly.
Like, the fact that churches are stepping up to do this, I think, is the perfect solution. Here are organizations that benefit from tax breaks, right? And everybody's always complaining the church gets such tax breaks. Well, here's a chance to take those opportunities the church has provided in the way of space available and resources to help and use those and fold these two problems or this problem. The church being tax exempt is not a problem. I didn't mean to say that. But take this opportunity that the churches have, given their status and the situations in these communities and this part of our population. I think every church should look at their capacity to take some of this problem on and help them. These are people. The community,
these people
care. I meant it as nice as I could. These are people who genuinely care about their neighbors.
Yeah.
These are people who have a compassionate, generous nature to them. This is the perfect situation. And I wish it would happen all across to every community within this voice.
There's a Catholic church, about 5 minutes away from where I live. And they have a warming station when it gets really, really cold. And they have done so for years. And not only do they do that, but they offer people, you can come and you can park your car. And if you have pets or whatever it is with you, they have a little space for the people with pets. And so The way that they've done all this has been very, and the community by and large is totally fine with it. But still, regardless of the fact that this is it's a private church, it's mm-hmm. a Catholic church. It's their land. It's their property. They own it. There are still people in the neighborhood that find this to be they take exception to it and they complain and they complain and they go around and they try to get me to sign a petition to try to get those people to leave, church. And every time they come to my door, I say, I'm just not interested. I think that they're providing a service. It's their property. I understand that you live 7 houses away or whatever it is. But I also live in this neighborhood, and I have not had a single issue with it. So I think that there will always be, no matter how much goodwill somebody has towards something, like there will always be people out there who despise it just because it exists, just because it's there, because they don't want – not only do they not want it in their backyard, they don't even want it to exist, period.
We've got a church about 2 blocks from our house at the major intersection, closest major intersection to our home. There is a rotating encampment that moves between 4 or 5 churches, and they kind of spread the responsibility of caring for this community around. And they'll move every 2 to 3 to 4 months. And they're due to come back to this church a block and a half from our house. We donate to that church. We're not going to say donate. We don't make tithe. When we have extra blankets, clothing, coats, instead of going to a donation site of any various denomination, we take it to this church because we know that they help these communities and they can use these resources when they do so. Now, 2 doors down from this church, in my neighborhood, there are high density multifamilies becoming the norm. They took down 1 house with a nice yard and put up 4 houses on this 1 yard. Those houses just sold, I swear to you, Jack, for $2 million each.
Wow.
4 houses in 1 lot. 2 doors down from this church. I can't wait for the day that this community comes back to this church's grounds. Because I hope that these folks and their new beautiful $2 million homes, $2 million, and you can smell what the neighbor is cooking for dinner. That's how close you are.
Right.
You know, when this community comes back and somebody comes at me with a petition, I will gladly try to give them a little generosity lesson. A little compassion and empathy lesson. Because I don't care if this guy was next, this church was next to my house.
Yeah.
You know, these are people who need help. This is a respectful community that appreciates the resources being offered to them, the opportunity to have a safe place to put their head down at night being offered to them by this church. I'll support it till the day I drop.
You know, that makes me think, Spike. You know those old timey movies where you see the nun who's walking around with the bell, and then she's got a chain of orphans behind her. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
She's like walking through the street, and she's like ringing the bell, and they're asking for money for the orphans. You've got it. It was in Gangs of New York has a scene with it. So my thought is that, like, back in the day when there were churches out there who were trying to raise funds for the poor or the invalid or whatever it was, did we have people back in, I don't know, the 1800s saying, get out of my neighborhood, I don't want to see it? Or were people much more likely to understand? I guess what I'm asking is have we lost a certain amount of our Christian charitability as a nation because we've become so irritated with the fringe elements of homelessness that even when there is a quote-unquote safe parking space, people are hesitant or resistant to it, that desire to want to help your fellow man, all of a sudden it goes out the window, because when I'm walking my dog, I don't want to see 12 RVs in that parking lot. You know?
I think the Ebenezer Scrooge, get away from me urchin types have always been there, but now there's just so much more of a problem that more of us are impacted by it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that I'm fine with more of these kind of to popping up all over the place.
I am as well.
I have no issue with it whatsoever. But again, I want to address the concerns of people that do. I don't want to diminish those concerns. We were going to get into AI, by the way. We were going to get into artificial intelligence and script writing, but we've only got about 30 seconds left.
We can do it when we come back, because I think you've got great takes on it. And I'm worried about AI taking over so many things. I really am.
I feel like, what's the other story that we had on the docket? I feel like that one might be just as interesting.
It is. The FTC is trying to make it easier for you to get out of a subscription you got into.
Yeah,
let's do that.
Yeah, let's do that one. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this. Spike, did I ever tell you that I worked at a radio station once that was attacked with ransomware?
No.
At the community college? Yeah. So I'm on air. I'm not on air. I was at the station. It's going to be maybe 30 minutes before the show starts. And our chief technical engineer, a guy named Bill, kind of guy that spent a little bit too much time under the towers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He kind of was like Doc Brown in a lot of ways. He's got a lot of frequencies going through his brain. Because he'd started doing radio in Guam, and then he did it in Hawaii. And I mean, the guy was like, radio had been his life since he was 18. So you spend that amount of time under the towers, you're going to maybe have a little twitch, maybe be a little buzzy every so often.
Yeah, Vern, the engineer, is about to walk in. Keep it
down. Oh, sorry, Vern. Sorry about that, buddy.
It's all good. Keep going. So
he comes in and he's swearing like he would not. He is going ballistic. So what had happened is somebody had we never learned who did this, but they had hacked into our system. They had gotten into the system. And they had locked us out of all imaging, all audio, all software. So the only thing that we could do was push the buttons on the board, which was analog, and go on air.
Okay.
Outside of that, no commercials, no news, no nothing. And because we had a license, you got to go on air, right? There's no,
you do.
There's no kind of like, okay, well, we'll resolve this later. And we couldn't play music because it didn't have a music license. So Dave and I, my co-host at the time, we just start talking and we do 4 hours nonstop trying to just fill the time until we could flip it over. So during those 4 hours, Bill was trying to find as many pre-recorded segments as he could from earlier shows.
Right, archival stuff, yeah.
Just archival stuff to round out the clock so that we could get somebody in to figure out what happened. So these guys wanted $2 million for the code to unlock the system. They wanted $2 million. And, of course, the guy that owned the place was like, I'm not paying that. So what we had to do over the next couple of days is we just went back through and we literally redid everything. All of the audio for the station, all the cuts, everything that we had. I'm talking through old archival stuff and pulling out commercials, you know, cutting the commercials out of. So it was a total nightmare, but I'll never forget that day of just having to just go for 4 hours. It's brutal. Absolutely brutal.
I feel it every night from 7 to 10 here. Pyro nights. I'm kidding. I have an experience with ransomware. I was working. I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to say.
Ooh.
Because it was a major television broadcast company.
Okay.
I was working with, and they were hit with ransomware, and they shut down our ability to do anything. I'm going to take a leap here. I'm not going to, because I'm trying not to give any names or be too.
Sure.
They refused to pay the ransomware. And so over the course of literally 6 weeks, 2 months, rebuilt their entire infrastructure of programming, billing, traffic and commercials, everything from the ground up. And they figured that the cost of doing the reconstruction, the cost of lost revenue, was going to be kind of a wash with paying the ransomware. But at that point in time, they will now have built a bulletproof system. You talk about yakking for 4 hours with not knowing what to say. We're talking about running like Father Knows Best for six straight days. I'm serious. The stations did everything they could to keep a product on the air.
Yeah.
No commercials were on the air at a major network station in a major market. But they decided not to cave to the ransomware. It would be better to them. Let's build a bulletproof system, regardless of what it costs, regardless how long it takes. Our advertisers, our partners will work with them. They'll understand. They'll appreciate why we're doing what we're doing. And they did. We worked through it for 2 months.
We get hit with phishing attacks all of the time here at Cairo. It's pretty amazing the amount of phishing, people trying to get into the back door.
Oh, yeah.
Vern's always sending emails to everybody. Don't open this email, which I find surprising because who in their right mind, no offense to anybody that's ever done this, if you get an email, like if I get an email that's from Spike at, you know, send me your money at CCP.
Uganda.com.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, I'm not sending Spike any money, but there are people out there. So they will copy somebody who works within the company. They'll get their name and then they will attach that to the email that they send to the person. So when you look at it in the sending line, it says, Andrew has sent you an email saying that you have to send Brian Buckaloo $1 million immediately. And but then the email is always this bizarre, you know, third world kind of email.
Yeah,
it's never so-and-so at Bonneville, such-and-such, right? It's always bizarre. So anyway, if you have fallen for that kind of scheme, I feel bad for you, but I guess it happens.
Well, that's how entire systems get compromised, one email. That's exactly how they get in.
Speaking of being compromised, by the way, the FTC wants to have a new click-to-cancel rule. Now, what that means is that if you've ever tried to cancel a subscription, basically what most of these services do is they have these things called ghost links, which basically sends you down the rabbit hole of trying to just find where you can actually cancel your subscription. Most infamously, this is Amazon, where you have to go through, I think, 12 different pages before you actually get to the button where you can cancel your Amazon Prime account. And even then, they have somebody call you and confirm that you want to cancel your Amazon. So most people give up. There have been studies that have been done on this. Most people give up when they try to cancel a subscription, and they just they end up saying, well, I'll take care of it later, and then they never get around to it. So now the FTC is proposing a new rule which would require businesses to make it easier to cancel a subscription as it was when it was to sign up for it. So how easy is it to sign up for Netflix?
One click.
Click a button.
One credit, click.
Right. Credit card information. Boom, 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 boom. To cancel Netflix, you're going to be spending 3 days trying to figure out, you know what I mean, on the phone with customer service. It's a nightmare. So I agree with this. I think this is good regulation from the FTC. I think it should be very easy for people to try to cancel their subscriptions. I'm still trying to cancel mine. I won't mention the company, but I've been going back and forth with this company now for months over a $5 charge. That they just, every time I go, I want to cancel it.
Every month.
They go, you got it. We've canceled it. You're not going to be charged anymore. And then I look at my credit card statement and boop, there it is, $5.99 every single month. And at this point, I'm at my wit's end.
That's one of the major things they're trying to address with this proposed legislation is that people are told that they're done. They're unsubscribed. They're canceled. And then the charges keep coming. Month after month after month. You know, first off, I thought you had to throw a Danny DeVito movie into a volcano to cancel your Netflix account. I'm glad it's only 12 pages or whatever it is. I've got a way of canceling subscriptions, and I've been doing it now for about 3 years. And having heard this story, I'm wondering if I'm adversely affecting my credit by doing it. I mean, what I do with subscriptions, because I can't keep track of how many things I'm subscribed to. My daughter... will subscribe to an app that helps her with a math situation, you know, an online tutorial app, things like that, you know, math.whatever or whatever. So, of so many pay a Paramount, Hulu, Tubi, whatever they call these things. I've got more subscriptions. I can't keep track. Every 6 months, I'll change the card that I use to pay for subscriptions. I have all those going through one dedicated account with my bank, and every 6 months I'll cancel that and I lost my card. I need you to issue me a new card, so a new card number is issued.
Why don't you just do the thing where you deny charge from that company that you don't want?
Then it's got to go to mitigation with the bank, and I don't want to tie up my bank so many times. They're happily send me a new card. Then the companies reach out to me.
Oh.
We need you to update your billing, and if it's something I want to keep, I update my billing. If it's something I want to cancel, it's done. I don't update my billing.
This is either genius or it's foolishness. I'm not sure. I haven't decided either.
I'm wondering if I'm adversely affecting my credit rating by ghosting these subscriptions, by not giving them new billing information. My credit score is wonderful.
Right.
And I imagine if I was, you know, becoming delinquent with several accounts for failure to provide adequate billing information, it would show on my credit report. It hasn't.
Anybody got an answer for this in the text line? Anybody know if Spike O'Neill is actually dragging his credit score into the dirt?
I'm cutting my financial bloodline to all these subscriptions, and when they call me for new billing information, if I don't want the service, I don't provide it.
All right. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. A lot of people are deeply upset about my hot take on the Grizzly Bears.
On bears. Of all the things we covered.
All right. And then on the police pursuit bill as well, many people, very hot and spicy takes. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this. All right. Hot takes, constructive criticisms. You know how much I love to be criticized, Spike. I love it. I can't get enough of it. Before we actually get into people's thoughts about our conversation on grizzly bears, TW writes in about TikTok, and I have ranted about this, I don't know, what is it, Spike, 500-600 times at this point in time on this show.
Yeah.
I don't believe that TikTok is a good app. All of the information that I've read about TikTok would suggest to me that it is a spyware at the very worst. It collects a tremendous amount of data, far more than almost any other app out there. So TW says, Jack, do you know if merely playing a TikTok vid clip will allow them into one's phone system, iOS, or is it only possible if the app is downloaded? It's only possible if the app is downloaded. So you can watch a video of TikTok, but if you have the app on your phone, that is how they get your information.
That's been my understanding as well. Yeah.
So apparently people don't understand what dry humor is, Spike. Apparently people don't understand what, you know, a couple of guys having a bit of a goof and a gaff is at the expense of bears is, because people were deeply upset at the idea that I was having a good joke at the idea that we should not reintroduce bears back into the ecosystem. Is it my tonal inflection, Spike? What is it? Is it the way that I thought I was being funny and charming, and apparently everybody else out there thought that I was being mean towards the grizzly bears? Boo, Jack Stein, you're so mean to these poor bears. How could you say this? Boo.
I have learned, Jack, that you never will know what is someone's passion point, someone's hot button.
Right.
And so we can be lighthearted and just throwing little comments aside about bears.
Right.
I mentioned there are brown bears and black bears, and there are no brown bears. I mean, we get to that text in a minute.
I'll read it. So 206. So Spike made a joke about the different kinds of bears. 206, obviously being devoid of a sense of humor, says there is no brown bears, just black bears and grizzlies. Grizzlies just need a little more caution than a black bear. But millions of people deal with it daily in Wyoming, Colorado, Montana, Idaho, and California.
Hey, come on now. He's typing fast. He's passionate. Come on.
There is zero reason to not introduce what we as humans have destroyed. Your conversation was literally two people who know nothing about bears talking about bears. Having a fun time joking about reintroducing bears. Of course they should reintroduce bears, dude. Come on. I mean, that was the entire point of the thing. It was just for funsies. Come on. Let's have a good time.
253. I love this one. Look it up yourself. The trees in this area are dependent on nutrients from salmon carcasses that are thrown around the forest by bears.
Yeah.
I think there's trees lots of places that survive and thrive without any salmon carcasses. And salmon, they leave carcasses all over the place, whether bears eat them or not, right?
I like this one from 206, though, because this one is a very good criticism. And I mean this in all sincerity. It says, Jack, 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 which is always a very good way to start a text message. Yes. Repeating my name multiple times. Spoken like a true city boy. That's very accurate. More black bears kill people in this country than grizzly bears. Yes. You get in the wrong place at the wrong time. It's dangerous, just like anything else. The chance that you getting killed by a grizzly bear is slightly south of impossible. That's the kind of text message I like right there. 206, excellent constructive criticism, positive, informational. Excellent job, 206. Excellent job, my friend.
I like the one from 360, though. It says, there's a reason why when something horrific happens, we call it grizzly. There's a reason why the pioneers shot the grizzlies almost out of existence. Do you know grizzly bears once walked the beaches at Alki, swam the Green River, and hunted where Seattle now stands? So I don't see the problem with reintroducing them at all.
On the police pursuit bill, we had poor Matt Markovich on, who is just sounding real scratchy today. Real sick.
He's working hard.
And so we were talking about how there was some infighting going on within the Democrats on this particular issue. And 425 says, I'm not surprised at all. These are Democrats you are referring to. They love criminals. Is that true, Spike? As a registered Democrat, do you love criminals?
I can't speak to that. I'm going to a meeting of criminals after this show's over.
It says there is no crime they don't love. That's, you know, I find this to be a pretty interesting statement, being that the 94 crime bill, Joe Biden's hallmark accomplishment in the Senate. What is his political affiliation again?
It's a big lazy D. I think the brand is on his cattle. Yeah.
Open your eyes, please. I beg you. This is really bad. 425. You got to break away a little bit from these talking points. These are not good talking points.
I'm not even going to mention, look up the most indicted administrations throughout U.S. history and see what letters behind those names.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing the name Nixon out there.
Yeah, 425. You might want to, I might recommend that if you are the kind of person who has these talking points, you might want to look into figures within the Democratic Party that have been the opposite of what you believe to be true. Now, I'm not trying to do Democratic apologism.
Nope.
That's just the way that the history works out. Speaking of history, by the way, Spike, this show is over for today.
Nice.
And we got to go to a show meeting with the great Brian Buckley so he can show us all of his Oakley sunglasses. And we will see you guys tomorrow. Goodbye.